Also, I wanted to, before we begin, well, let's do introductions around before anything
else.
Me too.
Ken.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
Danger.
Julian.
Sonia. Britt.
Lauren.
Jane.
Wendy.
Donovan.
Kitty.
So happy to see you all. Mm-hmm. This is wonderful. Mm-hmm. Feels warm. I wanted to say that we're going to have Sesshin at Jikoji. Jikoji is sponsoring the Buddhist Parinirvana Sesshin starting a week from Friday. And 2 weeks from Thursday, Donna Lynn is going to take the precepts again. And she's sewn a robe, so she will be... I brought the whole breakdown because I never remember these things. It's not so crucial in our tradition until it happens. And then I guess we're supposed to know about it slightly anyway. The first thing that we do and to take the precepts and receive one of these is called Jukai or Zaike Tokudo, which means staying home and accomplishing the way, which is really nice. And a lot of you are sewing these now and will receive them when you're finished. We'll have a ceremony here. Then the next one is called a novice ordination. The Zaike Tokudo is an ordination also. But then there's another ordination where you take the precepts again. And that's called Shukei Tokudo, which means home leaving or renunciation. It's a very big and very beautiful subject in terms of our practice. It doesn't mean walking out the door and leaving children and husband and everyone behind. It means the turn inward turning that completes the confirmation and intention that's been happening actually all one's life. It's a kind of choiceless step, just a step. And as Koban always pointed out, it's always stepping down. So it's leaving home and accomplishing the way. Koban always said wearing the okesa is wearing the inside on the outside. So in a way, it's a very vulnerable position, you could say. So it's a very grateful thing. It means that this Sangha has matured and that we can see how it works. It works like a garden or like food. It works way beyond us in a way and comes through us as we grow. So it's going to be at 3 o'clock on Thursday, the 21st, at Jikoji. It'll be a short ceremony, and then there'll be tea and things afterward. So I hope everyone can come for that and support and congratulate Donna Lynn for nothing. Nothing and everything. We're on page 76. It's a perfect thing to be reading tonight. Study yourself. To have some deep feeling about Buddhism is not the point. We just do what we should do, like eating supper and going to bed. This is Buddhism. You want to start?
The
purpose of studying Buddhism is not to study Buddhism, but to study ourselves. It is impossible to study ourselves without some teaching. If you want to know what water is, you need science, and the scientist needs a laboratory. In the laboratory, there are various ways in which to study what water is. Thus, it is possible to know what kind of elements water has, the very form it takes, and its nature. But it is impossible thereby to know water in itself. It's the same thing with us. We need some teaching, but just by studying the teaching alone, it is impossible to know what I in myself am. Although the teaching we may understand through the teaching, we may understand our human nature, but the teaching is not we ourselves. It is some explanation of ourselves. So if you are attached to the teaching or to the teacher, that is a big mistake. The moment you meet a teacher, you should leave the teacher, and you should be independent. You need a teacher so that you can become independent. If you are not attached to him or her, the teacher will show you the way to yourself. You have a teacher for yourself, not for the teacher.
Rinzai, early Chinese Zen master, analyzed how to teach his disciples in 4 ways. Sometimes he talked about the discipline itself, the disciple himself. Sometimes he talked about the teaching itself. Sometimes he gave an interpretation of the disciple or the teaching. Finally, sometimes he did not give any instruction at all to his disciples. He knew that even without being given any instruction, a student is a student. Strictly speaking, there is no need to teach the student, because the student himself is Buddha, even though he may not be aware of it. And even though he is aware of his true nature, if he is attached to this awareness, that is already wrong. When he is not aware of it, he has everything. But when he becomes aware of it, he thinks that what he is aware of is himself, which is a big mistake.
When you do not hear anything from the teacher, but just sit, this is called teaching without teaching. But sometimes this is not sufficient, so we listen to lectures and have discussions. But we should remember that the purpose of practice in a particular place is to study ourselves. To be independent, we study. Like the scientists, we have to have some means by which to study. We need a teacher because it is impossible to study ourselves by ourselves. But you should not make a mistake. You should not take what you have learned with a teacher for you yourself. The study you make with your teacher is a part of your everyday life, a part of your insistent activity. In this sense, there is no difference between the practice and the activity you have in everyday life. So to find the means of your life in the Zendo is to find the meaning of your everyday activity. To be aware of the meaning of your life, you practice Zazen.
When I was at Aichi Monastery in Japan, everyone was just doing what he should do. That is all. It is the same as waking up in the morning. We have to get up. At Aichi Monastery, when we had to sit, we sat. When we had to bow to Buddha, we bowed to Buddha. That is all. And when we were practicing, we did not feel anything special. We did not even feel that we were leading a monastic life. For us, the monastic life was the usual life, and the people who came from the city were unusual people. When we saw them, we felt, oh, some unusual people have come. But once I had left Aichi and been away for some time, coming back was different. I heard the various sounds of practice, the bells and the monks reciting the sutra, and I had a deep feeling. There were tears flowing out of my eyes, nose and mouth. It is the people who are outside of the monastery who feel its atmosphere. Those who are practicing actually do not feel anything. I think this is true for everything. When we hear the sound of the pine tree on a windy day, perhaps the wind is just blowing, and the pine tree is just standing in the wind. That is all that they are doing. But the people who listen to the wind in the tree will write a poem or will feel something unusual. That is, I think, the way everything is.
So, to feel something about Buddhism is not the main point. Whether that feeling is good or bad is out of the question. We do not mind whatever it is. Buddhism is not good or bad. We are doing what we should do. That is Buddhism. Of course, some encouragement is necessary, but that encouragement is just encouragement. It is not the true purpose of practice. It is just medicine. When we become discouraged, we want some medicine. When we are in good spirits, we do not need any medicine. You should not mistake medicine for food. Sometimes medicine is necessary, but it should not become our food.
So of Rinzai, four ways of practice. The perfect one is not to give a student any interpretation of himself, nor to give him any encouragement. If we think of ourselves as our bodies, the teaching then may be our clothing. Sometimes we talk about our clothing, sometimes we talk about our body. But neither body nor clothing is actually we ourselves. We ourselves are the big activity. We are just expressing the smallest particle of the big activity. That is all. So it is all right to talk about ourselves, but actually there is no need to do so. Before we open our mouths, we are already expressing the big existence, including ourselves. So the purpose of talking about ourselves is to correct the misunderstanding we have when we are attached to any particular temporal form or color of the big activity. It is necessary to talk about what our body is and what our activity is so that we may not make any mistakes about them. So to talk about ourselves is actually to forget about ourselves.
Dogen Zenji said, to study Buddhism is to study ourselves. To study ourselves is to forget ourselves. When you become attached to a temporal expression of your true nature, it is necessary to talk about Buddhism, or else you will think the temporal expression is it. But this particular expression of it is not it, and yet at the same time, it is it. For a while, this is it. For the smallest particle of time, this is it. For it is not always so. The very next instant, it is not so. Thus, this is not it. So that you will realize this fact, it is necessary to study Buddhism. But the purpose of studying Buddhism is to study ourselves and to forget ourselves. When we forget ourselves, we actually are the true activity of the great existence, or reality itself. When we realize this fact, that there is no problem whatsoever in this world, and we can enjoy our life without feeling any difficulties, the purpose of our practice is to be aware of this fact.
Are there questions? Yes.
I wonder if the subtle laughter by pretty much everybody on the last paragraph is insightful to the fact that that may be the most true paragraph of all. That we see the truth of it that's so unbelievable to our own selves that we chuckle at it. That it, we can't believe it's true, that it's it and then it's not it, and it kind of goes away, and that seems nonsensical, but I think I laugh because in some sense I know it's true.
Yeah. And yet it's bewildering if you try to figure it out.
Right.
There's just no way to figure it out. It's a matter of trusting practice so that it becomes obvious. Zazen is all about experience. It's not about the ideas. And you get a little book like this that's trying to express what can't be expressed, really. And this is a wonderful example of how hopeless it is in a way. Though we try and try, it's pointing to something. It's pointing to the experience, but it doesn't quite reach it. But if we've practiced for any length of time, we can see it out there as he speaks, or see it deep inside us, maybe is a better way to say it. The temporal expression, there's so much talk about time these days. And this is it in another disguise. But if you get caught by time and think that how we're saying it now is it, it's too late. It's already gone. So time is just a function of how we think. It's another thought. Actually, this self that we talk about studying is another thought. It's a thought that, in a way, we paste on to Buddha nature. We paste on self-identity of various kinds. If you follow your mind during your day, you'll see how often you redefine yourself. You know, in one situation, you think of yourself as one way or one kind of person or one who. And then, you know, a couple of hours later, maybe, or maybe two more minutes later, you'll be thinking of yourself in another way. We paste these thought figures about ourselves onto nothing, onto this. What does he call it? True activity of the big existence. True activity of the big existence. I mean, that's mind-boggling. A tiny particle, he says. Smallest particle of the big activity. That's all we are. We're an expression of that. But that minimalizes something that actually is fantastic and fascinating, awesome, so that we never really get to the end of the study of the self, because it gets more and more detailed. If we look at things as things, and it gets more and more transparent if we look through the self to the big mind, to the great consciousness, you could say. Our mind works both ways. So that life in the world is complex, interesting, and yet, ultimately, our whole life is completely transparent as the activity of the whole. As we sit, we become more and more familiar with how we operate as a small mind, and about familiar with all our various selves, all our conditioning, And then we begin to, sometimes I think it's like a lollipop, it just more and more light begins to shine through all of that. It gets thinner and thinner and more transparent or translucent. So that we become more at ease in our life, realizing we're not, although we are so limited, we're not limited at all. That we ourselves are the great activity. Jing?
Read a lot about the sincere effort to forget ourselves and why that is good and why it's good. And the other side of that, though, is why is it that we are born with that thickness that we want to try and abide with and see it thin. Why is it? Is it necessary? Is it? Why do causes and conditions make us so thin? Why can't it be other? And I don't want to sound like I'm longing. I'm not. But why is it? Is it? What does Dharma tell us about that? That it's necessary that through causes and conditions that we are so attached to ourselves. Is it necessary?
Well, it's a survival thing, isn't it? Of course we are somebody. This isn't talking about throwing ourselves away. It's not talking about getting rid of ourselves. Buddha said, I. He answered when people called. The transparency I'm talking about is the idea of us. All the many ideas that we have.
But why is it necessary that we have to balance that, that we don't just abide in our Buddha nature all the time?
Because we're human beings. And we are have this dichotomous mind that works in two modes. So it splits things. It naturally splits, so experience becomes split. And because of that split, we begin to see ourselves. We become the one who sees and the one who's being seen. And then with that misunderstanding, we think that there's somebody else here.
I can see that, and I don't know why there must have that kind of mind that splits off like that.
I don't think there is any must in it. I think that's just the way it is.
So the Dharma is a way of understanding that, but it doesn't necessarily tell us
why
that came from.
No.
About.
This is what the universe did. We're happening just like a rhinoceros. You know, who would believe a rhinoceros? Why? That big thing on its, I mean, it's unbelievable. Here we are.
So the Dharma is not like, you know, a physicist who has some understanding of the Big Bang and the time before that and it's more of, oh, I'm just impossible to try. It's more of, maybe it's that if one stays on a cushion long enough or attains enlightenment or whatever you call it, you can see that original face but it's not possible to talk about it or...
Well, they say if you see the original face, you die. No, it's nothing to...
The Buddha did not see the original face?
Buddha saw a star. He just saw a star. Actually, it was Venus rising in the dawn. Anybody can see it. It's nothing special. And what he discovered was already there. He just had to encounter Mara first. He had to encounter all the conditioning that I was just talking about, all the ideas, all the attractive and appalling activities of his mind, which we tend to believe. And it's just our belief in them that is the hindrance.
And so it's not a question of stepping to the time, a time, or a way of being or understanding before that. It's not like that.
There's no other time.
Like
that, isn't it?
Samia? Can you elaborate on the original face? Is that like back to basics or the simplicity of it or...
Well, there's several ways of thinking about it. It's like talking about seeing God, that we're too small for that, or it's too big for that. So it's obliteration. Or sometimes they talk about seeing your original face before your parents were born. That's a little different. It's a way of dropping the limitation of time and seeing your life, seeing how far back life goes, our own life goes, infinitely far. And goes infinitely far into the future also. So with that kind of understanding, it makes the present moment not so fraught, not so dangerous and difficult. It's just part of this whole of which we express and act and live. As we are, just as we are. We're not going to get any better. Just get to be more who we are. Julian?
I guess I have a couple of things that have stirred up in my head. Now, like transparency, the idea of a transparent universe. Would an example of that be like seeing that chair? Okay. Chair with the way it's designed, a person made that chair from a tree.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why it particularly got formed that way is because of the way our bodies are.
Yes.
And I mean, if you kind of think of that, I don't know. It feels like a bit stretching to me, in the sense, there's an expansion that I sense from, like, if you go beyond, like, just the chair, and, you know, if you apply that to different kinds of things, like, I don't know, matter, the way we are interacting with matter, I guess.
Sure, sure. I mean, my great-grandfather was a physicist, and he sat his daughter down, is that who it was? My great-aunt down when she was a little girl, and said to her, "This step you're sitting on is made of atoms." And he described the atoms and how they all clung together. They were invisible, but they were all working. And she was amazed. And she said it changed her whole way of seeing life for the whole rest of her life. She told me that when she was way up in her 80s. But once you know that everything is made of atoms, you never see things the same anymore. You know that they are changing and falling and flying apart and coming together in every different kind of way. So the chair was once a tree, and then it was somebody's hard work to put it together. One of the ways of describing emptiness is to say, if you take off a leg of the chair, is it still a chair? If you take off this part, is it still a chair? How many parts do you take off before it's just a pile of lumber? Where'd the chair go? So, everything is transparent in that way. Everything is empty in that way, including our own body. Take off a finger, oh, there's lots of body left. How much body do you take away before there's no body anymore? Everything is like that.
So that this whole, I mean, life seems unbearably light. So I mean, to borrow.
Yes, phrase. It is. And
but yet there's this also sense, you know, you got to do the right thing. And I kind of sense that there's a kind of a balance, but it's like I don't want the universe to be balancing on my face, so to speak. If I do the, there's this kind of like, am I doing the right thing? That kind of almost anxiety or something. That
yes,
it seems to. There seems to be a part of the Dharma that talks about right action, but when the universe seems so light,
it just you can get more and more familiar with that.
How do you know you're being familiar with the right thing? Because you won't
have that question. Vanya said the other day, just do what gives you pleasure.
Some people get pleasure from very weird things.
Well, that's not you. I mean, it's really true. You can't measure from anybody else. All you can measure is from your own depth. And we all know, if we're serious about our lives, we all know when we're being off the wall and when we're being true to ourselves. And it's that being true to ourselves that's the important part, the authenticity. Not how we fit in with the rest of the world. Often we don't fit in with the rest of the world. If we're truly authentic, often we don't. It's difficult. They say a bodhisattva's life is hard.
And the people who, I don't know, get pleasure from, like, I don't know, weird things, for example, or a part of me saying, well, like, with the universe being as light as it is, there's probably some kind of a reason for that as well. You know what I mean? It, like, it just, it's part of
the part of the whole thing. Yeah. Yeah.
But yet, it's, I still get this feeling from some of the teachings that we are to be something.
No, just be, just be yourself.
Weirdness and all.
Weirdness and all.
Yes. That's what I figured. It's just, it's kind of, it's weird.
Well, you know, we're raised, we have a long childhood, and we're raised by anxious parents who want us to be a certain way. And so a lot of our life after childhood is trying to find out what's underneath those instructions that our parents gave us, with very deep concern for our survival. You know, we have to know how to get through the world and how to behave in order to stay alive. But then to find out, I think we all come to the cushion with some kind of question about what is this really? Beyond all of that, what's really going on here? What am I? And that's a very important question.
In the Heart Sutra that was chanted, there's a reference to the three worlds. And the three worlds, all Buddhas depend on the Prajnaparamita. What three worlds are there?
Well, there are three worlds. There's past, present, and future, and form, formless, and I always forget the third, neutral or something like that.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, it just means the whole kit and caboodle.